it'd be a good idea to reboot, but we don't have time, so we're just gonna onward through the fog. Foggy. A foggy day in London town.
From the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Well, good morning. What's up? Really? No kidding. Really? Holy cow. Phew. Tell me about that later. What's up, Doc? Well, it's the fourth Tuesday of the month. That would be... We'll play What's Up with Dr. Jennifer Daniels, who's in Panama. She's a good one, and you're going to meet her in about 30 seconds as soon as I get finished with my little intro here. This is OneRadioNetwork.com, May 23rd, 2017, just in case you're lost. I guess there's some kind of holiday weekend thing we have coming up, right? Is this a Memorial Day weekend thing this weekend? I think so. We should take Monday off. Okay, talk me into it. Everybody else is. Andrew Goss will be here tomorrow. And Dr. Richard Massey and Meridian Grace on Thursday. And Sharon and I will be here on Friday. Open Phone Friday. As I mentioned, Dr. Jennifer Daniels is in Panama. The great, wonderful country of Panama. Where they're making their canals wider and wider so they can do more. What are they? Do more shipping. They're just bigger ships, right, Doc?
Bigger ships, wider, deeper. Mm. And so bigger ships,
yeah.
More stuff,
yeah.
Moves faster.
I saw a map the other day. I don't know how I came across it, of Panama and, mm-hmm. and the canal. And wow, it's really quite a project that they did.
Yes.
And it saves this map said it saves 8,400 nautical miles by cutting across rather than going around the whole thing. Wow. That's a
correct.
Lot. That's a lot. That's a lot.
So you can creep through the canal and you save all that time anyway that you would have spent, you know.
That's right. That's right.
Going all the way around. You know, no speed there. You can just take your time and creep through and you still save weeks.
Do you know how long the canal is? Do you have any idea how many miles?
No, it's not very long.
No. Uh-huh. It's amazing that when did they dig that? Do you know?
Early 1900s. It took them a while to dig it. They didn't just dig it. They had to go through several tries and attempts.
Sure. Well, you can imagine, too, with the technology, 70, 80, I don't know how long ago? Almost 100 years ago.
Correct.
Wow. Yeah, they were just using big shovels, man. That had to take a long time. God, I love them.
Yeah.
Well, Doc, you're in Panama, and that's where you live, and you were walking this morning, and you put your toes in the stream and everything, and you're
yes, I did.
So are you all ready?
Nice cold water and nice warm Panama.
Nice warm Panama, yeah. And when is your rainy season there?
You know, the rainy season really starts somewhere in August. It really comes down hard in August, September, and October, and then kind of starts letting up in November, December, and then. No rain at all. This is usually January, February, March. And then the rains gradually creep back in and get heavy by August.
You must have a lot of... is fruit a big deal down there with your climate? A lot of fruit trees?
There is a lot of fruit. And it's not what's sold in the United States. So a lot of our fruits here are wild fruits that don't pack well and don't travel well. And really, bananas, pineapples, and papayas, that's pretty much the size of it in terms of export or fruits that are durable enough to pack and ship.
Uh-huh. Papayas are good, aren't they? They're fun, papayas.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a lot of mangoes out now that they're fun to eat. Do you eat a lot of fruit yourself?
No, not that much. I probably eat maybe a piece a day. Mm-hmm. I think yesterday, well, we have bananas growing right here in the yard, right off the porch and on the other side of the yard. So we've had as many as 10 bunches of bananas growing at one time.
Are they good? Bananas good down there? Nice ones?
Oh, my gosh. You can't even imagine. They're so much better than the ones in the United
really?
States. In the United States, they breed them to be a certain specification, you know, size, length, width, flavor. But here, there's bananas that taste like pineapple, bananas that taste like custard, bananas that taste like apple. It's incredible, just the variety. There's like hundreds of different types of bananas.
Do you all see the seeds in your bananas? You know, here that they hybrided out the seeds. You don't see the seeds in here anymore.
There's different varieties. So there's a red banana where the seeds are actually like a quarter inch by an eighth of an inch. Mm-hmm. They're big and black.
Ooh.
And those people don't eat those. Birds eat those bananas. But the other bananas here, yes, they do have the seeds where we can see them. Also, in the United States, you think that there's a banana and there's a plantain. Not true. There's all kinds of gradations in between. And it's a big blur. And so at the extremes, something tastes like a plantain and something tastes like a banana. But in the middle, I said, this banana is pretty starchy. So it's that took some getting used to, because you'd ask for a banana and you get something that looks like a banana and you're like, it kind of tastes like it might not really be a banana. But it's not a plantain either. It's just so fat and thick.
You often hear people say, especially some of the more elderly people, they say, I eat a banana every day because my doctor said I need the potassium. Or is it potassium? Is there really a lot of potassium in bananas? Are they worth eating, do you think?
Not for the potassium, because there's too much other stuff in there. There's too much starch and sugar in there. And what happens then is you get diabetes trying to address your potassium issue. So that doesn't make sense.
That's right. My blood sugar is 148, but man, I got my potassium.
Okay. Right. And so what happens then is, by way of treating your high blood pressure, they create diabetes. And this is the standard thing. So when I was in medical school, I noticed someone would come in for blood hypertension. You're like, I wonder how long it'll be before they get diabetes. Not realizing that we were giving them drugs for their hypertension, water pills, for example, that actually create the diabetes. And they're giving them dietary advice, which gives them diabetes, like eat a banana for your potassium. Well, duh, what's wrong with a green pepper?
Yeah, that's right. Duh, what's wrong with a green pepper? What's your GMO situation down there in Panama? Prevalence, a labeling prevalence, that kind of thing?
There's not labeling. There is no labeling here. It's just like everybody knows this is GMO or that's GMO or this is hydroponic. Things are labeled as to whether or not they're hydroponic. There are people who label something as not GMO. There's nothing labeled as GMO. So that's pretty much where it stands. And you have to kind of be up on things to know, well, certain things like sugarcane, for example, have not yet been genetically modified. So you're pretty cool with the cane juice. And so coconut hasn't been genetically modified yet.
Yeah.
So, you know.
We spoke to a lady up in Montana, Doc, or Judy Hoy, who's been an official animal rescue lady for about 40 years. And over the years, and she's done some work with Stephanie Seneff on the GMOs doing papers, and she's seen, and her conjecture is that these little animals are getting malformation nutritional deficiencies early on. She sees them, you know, in the deer and the little rodents. They have underbites where their lower jaw, you know, isn't fully developed, you know. And they're connecting it to the glyphosates and the GMO being sprayed huge amounts in the Northwest. It gets blown around in the winds. Pretty interesting work.
It is very interesting work. The problem, though, the challenge is, it might be the glyphosate, it might be the GMO. Genetic modification. Yeah. So you don't really know which it is. And also, there's so many chemicals in the environment. And I tell people, you know, you just are not being told what's really going on. For example, this year has been a terrible year for allergies for many people. Well, is it really allergies or is it chemical spraying?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and the government has historically got into a lot of, you know, chemical releases where it experiments on populations to see what effect, you know, happens.
Oh, you're talking about through the jets and the chemtrails and all that stuff.
There's jets, there's chemtrails, and there's actual spraying experiments, like in California, where they just spray people. Everyone says, oh, it's the flu. And really, it's not the flu. It's the government releasing chemicals to see what effect it has on the population. And I mean, one side effect of all these so-called wars is our government actually experiments on its citizens here in the United States in preparation, supposedly, for these wars.
And ladies and gentlemen, if you think Dr. Jennifer Daniels is just talking like a free radical Jane Fonda of 40 years ago, she's not. there are documents that's been released over the years, once they got into public record, I think after 50 years, that the one we love, have done some things. The Skanigi, what's that one? The one in Alabama they did.
Tuskegee.
They have a track record for doing this, Doc.
So do you want to talk about that Tuskegee experiment, what really happened there?
Well, if you want to get dark, go ahead.
It's pretty dark. It even affects light people.
I know.
These African American men were diagnosed as having syphilis and were left untreated for a period of like 40 years.
Wow.
And what happened was they were given doctor's appointments to come back on a regular basis, and they were checked, and their symptoms that they developed from untreated syphilis were documented. And 24 years into that experiment, lupus was discovered.
Lupus.
And what is lupus? Lupus is nothing more than untreated syphilis. So they then decided, notice no one checks for syphilis anymore. It's because what they've decided is this whole group of disease called rheumatoid arthritis and lupus is really untreated syphilis. And you can Google the symptoms of lupus and the symptoms of syphilis, and you'll find they're absolutely identical, down to the congenital syndrome of the babies.
Really?
And so what happened was they used these African-American men as an experimental base, but the information they used to launch another disease, a manufactured renamed disease, which is really syphilis, and to convince people basically to allow their syphilis to go untreated and to accept steroids, to accept disease-modifying agents, and this whole panoply of expensive chemicals manufactured by drug companies. And so it's created an incredible financial industry from people who have syphilis, which historically would have been, we'll just put in parentheses, treated.
So let me see if I understand. They gave these black men syphilis through injection?
No. Well, I don't know if they gave them how they got syphilis. We can leave that open to discussion. But okay. They got syphilis.
They
went to the doctor, and instead of treating them, the doctor said, oh, you need to go to this special place over here where they treat syphilis.
Right.
And that special place did not treat syphilis. It just observed their symptoms over a period of decades.
Because they wanted to experiment and just see what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see. And how did Dr. Daniels, has this morphed into this disease, quote unquote, they call lupus, which is pretty prevalent in our country?
Exactly.
How did it go there? What's the migration plan?
Well, I was sitting in medical school as I observed this.
Mm-hmm.
And in medical school, your doctor is taught, and this is I went to medical school about 30 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we now have 30 years of doctors who are trained. Now, there is this mixed connective tissue disease called lupus. These are the symptoms, blah, blah, blah. Now, one way of diagnosing lupus is you can do a syphilis test, and it will be positive. Of course, it will be a false positive.
And
so the doctor is already conditioned to ignore this positive syphilis test and not even try to treat it.
Oh, they call it a false positive when they see it.
Oh, yeah. By definition, we know it's a false positive. Oh, if a person has XYZ symptoms, you do a syphilis test, it's a false positive. That syphilis test is positive. You just ignore it and go ahead and treat the lupus.
Huh.
And so doctors are actually trained to ignore the syphilis.
To this day?
To this day.
Wow.
Now, next question, you want to go deeper? You want to go darker?
Yeah, let's go.
How do these folks get the syphilis?
I've always heard that you got it through unprotected sex with somebody who's been places you don't want to go. I don't know.
So you're running around using a condom, and maybe you have one partner, and you're totally faithful, and you still get lupus.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's the real darkness.
Okay.
So, you know, here in Panama, lots of time, nothing better to do. So what I look up syphilis. And basically, syphilis is a vaccine contaminant. And as early as the 1700s, when they were vaccinating people, 25% of all children who were vaccinated got syphilis.
Really?
And they renamed it. It's, oh, this is congenital syphilis. Oh, you must have got it from your mother, blah, 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 blah. But it was a vaccine contaminant. And it's still going on today.
Contaminant
meaning? That's what happened now. You want to go deeper.
Okay.
Let's go to Lyme, Connecticut. So in Lyme, Connecticut, the mothers noticed that all of their three-year-olds were getting this crippling arthritis. Well, the doctor said, oh, you have juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. Not realizing that rheumatoid arthritis itself is really just syphilis, but they said, you have juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. And the parents said, no, no, no. Why would all of our kids get it? All of these kids are getting coming down at the same time, at the same age, three years of age, right? And so the government scratches its head and says, uh-oh, we got to backtrack. We got to figure out something. Okay. It's caused by a spirochete, which syphilis is a spirochete. And the spirochete is called Lyme. And the parents were pretty happy with that. But the question is, if it's caused by a spirochete, and the spirochete's called Lyme, and it's carried by mosquitoes, let's just say, ticks.
Ticks.
Then how come all the ticks only bite the three-year-olds and not the two-year-olds or
well,
the one-year-olds?
Yeah, because the three-year-olds.
But the six-year-olds.
Yeah, they're more susceptible, three-year-olds.
No.
No, I'm
but just think
I'm,
about
I know,
it.
I know what you're
yeah,
saying.
Just think about this.
Yeah, it's just,
how does this tick know this is a three-year-old?
Hmm.
And so the real deal is the vaccine schedule. And these are totally compliant, obedient parents who take their kids to the pediatrician, who get the vaccines, who got their prenatal care, did everything they're supposed to, and it turned out wrong. And so that is the full circle of the Tuskegee experiment and how the data has been used and how today it affects and shapes our lives.
So someone who has been diagnosed with lupus today, you might conjecture and they could research, perhaps they just were infected with a vaccine sometime in their life. And they've got some syphilis, whatever.
Exactly.
And then how would they treat that then?
Very good question. So then, having nothing better to do, I decided to do some research. Does penicillin really cure syphilis? What's the answer? The answer is no.
Originally, didn't it do it, and then it stopped doing it?
No.
Never did.
Yeah, so you're reading the cover story.
I always do the cover story.
You have to go dig into the research. Okay, to dig into the research, and you don't say, does penicillin kill syphilis? Because you're going to get the answer back, of course it does. But instead, you Google penicillin-resistant syphilis. And what will you find? There was always penicillin-resistant syphilis. At no point was penicillin especially effective in treating syphilis. And then you dig deeper, you find out, well, you know, you get a penicillin, and you have to retreat. What does that mean? It means the penicillin didn't work the first time.
Mm-hmm.
It means it didn't work the second time. It means it didn't work the third time. So the penicillin for syphilis, again, is another psyop, another propaganda sales story. So then I said, well, let me go back further. What did they treat syphilis with?
Sulfur, wasn't it? Sulfur?
No. So dig back to what really worked, not what did they try.
Okay.
What really worked? What actually was the treatment for syphilis? You're just gonna sit down, hold on to your hat, sit down, get your balance. Clean food, clean air, clean water, and frequent bowel movements and cleaning out. And turpentine.
I'm shocked. Is that right?
And you know, the same thing works for lupus. And the same thing works for rheumatoid arthritis. Do you know that?
I know it now. I know it now.
Speechless.
So, is the turpentine, in your opinion, with these things, is it going after some kind of creepy crawly that it deadens, similar to the parasites, and then the immune system gets it? Same model?
It's the same model, but the turpentine does two things. It immobilizes the parasites and strengthens the immune system, allowing the body to heal itself.
Okay.
That's the basic short story.
Yeah. So how far back was this prescription to get rid of syphilis what you said, clean water.
I had
clean,
to go back to the 1700s to get
and that's
this.
What they said back then. Clean water, clean air, rest, and turpentine.
Yeah.
Really? No kidding. That's crazy.
And bowel movements. And bowel movements.
And bowel movements. Yeah, you got to poop, man. You got to poop.
You got to poop, man. It needs someplace to go. It's got to leave the body.
Wow. Dr. Jennifer Daniels probably, I don't know, she's probably totally responsible for bringing turpentine out and probably around the world because she did this experiment and her people and her family. Anyway, I want to plug your free PDF because people email me all the time asking questions about turpentine. Mm-hmm. And I immediately say, go to vitalitycapsules.com, right?
That's right.
Do the Candida Cleanse PDF. It's free. And
it's
download
free.
That and read it. And then you'll answer all your questions and you'll do it right and not hurt yourself. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. You don't want anyone to hurt themselves.
No. You don't want to do that. Because turpentine is a pretty potent essential oil. Comes from the pine tree. First of all, you can get the yuck stuff, which is not good. Mm-hmm. And secondly, even if you got the really good stuff, you could do too much and hurt yourself.
Right. Or do too little and not do a darn bit of good.
Not do a darn bit of good. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So isn't that interesting? I wonder how many people have lupus in this country that are taking...
Whoa, back up. How many have lupus? How many have Lyme?
Lyme, yeah.
Oh, yeah. How many?
you think it's all the same thing?
It's all the same thing. The problem was there were these upper middle class, well-to-do women who all had these sick kids, and they were determined to get to the bottom of it. And they were going to get to the bottom of it. But the government derailed them with this plausible story called Lyme.
Yes. And boy, it's a great story. Great name.
It's a great story.
It's a great story.
And then they embellish on it, build on it. Well, it's only the deer tick. Well, we think the deer tick and the wood tick. Well, even the mosquitoes too. Well, we're not sure. And you can, and it spreads. And now, oh my God, you could get it through sex. Oh boy. Yeah. So now we're back to the syphilis story.
Yeah.
Syphilis is a sexually transmitted disease.
Yeah, yeah. And then, it's interesting. I love to listen to some of the news in Austin. And the political heroes there in these really far left cities like Austin, they are now getting into the they want to protect everybody from having unprotected sex. I mean, you start getting involved with sex and boy, the politicians are out there and they're going to protect you. They're going to protect you. It's crazy what they're doing. It's crazy. Just if you knew what they were doing, some of the stuff.
Well, wait, it's the same old thing recycled. I mean, the king had sex with whoever he wanted to. He
That's
could tell
right.
people, hey,
That's
you can't right. have sex. You can, right?
That's
we're
right.
We're just going back to the days of kings and queens and subjects.
That's right.
And these people are just saying, we want to be subjects. We want the king and the queen to tell us when we can have sex and when not to, and when we can eat and when not. In fact, I want to appoint myself to be the jester or the whatever of the court. I want to be the official the government works through to enforce these laws controlling my fellow people.
Yeah, yeah.
Look That's at the, all it is. Yeah, it's all
yeah,
about
Look
power.
At the mayor of New York. What's his face? Bloomberg or something like that? I mean, he had a big crusade against large soft drinks. It was too big. I mean, if you go to McDonald's, you can only have 16 ounce. You can't really have 18 ounce.
And it's all about extending the power of certain people and reducing the power of certain other people.
Yes, ma'am. I think you're right there.
That's all it is.
Yeah, boy, it is. Planet Earth. Okay, we're going to get to your emails right now. That's a great story about the syphilis lupus thing. Man, that's good. Good job. Dr. Jennifer Daniels, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. If you want to get pooping like there's no tomorrow, you get yourself some Vitality Capsules. Go to VitalityCapsules.com. Check out some Vitality Capsules with Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and she'll get you pooping and before you know it.
In this country, the sulfur levels have been dropping. There was an alarm that went out to the Congress, and this was in 1932 or 34 when this big warning came out. Mineral quantities have been dropping in the U.S. for quite a while, and especially as farmland got worn out. Notable of things was the sulfur. And if you had been eating high sulfur foods all of your life, you may be getting enough sulfur, but we're not. And the sulfur content in foods is way low. And really, you need sulfur. The number one thing that sulfur does is it detoxifies the cells.
Thank you, George. George Altgelt on a previous show. He's a biologist, chemist, and knows a lot about agriculture. The number one thing, he says, is sulfur detoxifies the cells. This is pure sulfur. Very few of them are. Three prices, three locations, United States, Canada, and worldwide. Click and order. See the ad right-hand side on OneRadioNetwork.com. Well, another thing that'll help you to keep the old bowels moving is, of course, plenty of water. And the another thing would be movement. Yeah, that's like when you get up off the couch and you do something, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, that thing. Movement. Dr. Daniels, two or three years ago, she suggested after you eat, and I've been doing it ever since, see, because I do listen to some doctors, that after you eat, it's a great idea to get your knees high, you know what I mean? Like nigh and walk. So I do that on the rebounder virtually every night after dinner. I'll go on the rebounder and just start walking in place kind of fast, and you can go as fast as you want, with those knees really high, really high, really high. And that helps to keep everything kind of churned up in there, moving around, moving around, moving around, help you to digest your food. And I also like to rub my tummy in the clockwise. There's an old Buddhist kind of Taoist thing that say if you walk, I don't know, something like 90 paces and rub your stomach clockwise after you eat, you'll never have digestive problems. You know, they have all these wild things. And I like to do that a lot, and ever since I read that, I read these little things and I do it for some reason, and it's just kind of fun. So if you like to get yourself a rebounder, these are really terrific tools. I've been rebounding since the early 90s. It'll help keep your body firm. It'll help keep you young and keep you moving. And then the aerobics thing, of course, for the the heart and all that stuff. And it's just a good thing to do. Pretty safe. The only thing, you can hurt yourself if you fall off. So don't do too much turpentine and get on the rebounder. And their lifetime warranty, which is pretty rare these days. Lifetime warranty, anything. Lifetime warranty. It is the Rebound Air Rebounder 329 delivered. I think that's the number. It's 3-something. You'll see it. 3. And that's continental U.S. For those of you who didn't homeschool, that does not include Alaska or Hawaii or Panama. Email me if you live in one of those places, and I think it's about an extra $50.
Hi there, Dick Allgaier here. I was a mainstream television news reporter for over 3 decades. I normally never do commercial endorsements. I am very skeptical of health supplements, but a friend of mine told me about his experience with Synergy One, so I purchased a bottle, and my wife and I have been using it for a few weeks now. I very much dislike so-called energy boosters, those little energy drinks that have caffeine and guarana and other things that make your heart race. This is not that. My experience with Synergy One has been great. My mood is better, my joints feel better, I have more vigor, more stamina, way increased productivity. My wife and I both notice that we even dream more. So I recommend Synergy One. It's really good stuff. I'm having great results with it.
You can click on the One World Way banner ad right here on OneRadioNetwork.com. That's OneRadioNetwork.com.
Know the source.
The source.
OneRadioNetwork.com.
He was born in the summer of his 27th year, coming home to a place he'd never been before. He left yesterday behind him. You might say he was born again. You might say he found the key for every door. When he first came to the mountains, his life was far away. On the road and hanging by a song. But the string's already broken and he doesn't really care. It keeps changing fast and it don't last for long. The Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've seen it rain and fire.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
Beautiful country up there, John Denver. No, we're not disconnected. We're just coming out of a commercial, Doc. I'm not going anywhere. A couple years ago, Colorado got that Rocky Mountain High thing going, Dr. Daniels, and legalized recreational marijuana. And many, many, many states around the country are considering doing medical marijuana. I never did talk to you much about it before we get into the emails. What kind of research have you done, if any, on the benefits, healing benefits of either the regular old marijuana or the high CBD oil? Have you looked into that at all?
So back when I looked into this, which would be the 90s, there really wasn't much research being done with CBD oil, or I should say not productive research.
Uh-huh.
There was a lot of research being done with the actual herb, we'll call it the weed or the plant itself,
mm-hmm.
where the part that you smoke is the bud. So it's not the leaf, not the stem, not the roots, but this, that. And the research was just phenomenal. It showed that, it could heal glaucoma. It was awesome for pain relief, for nausea control, especially in the areas of cancer. And so it was a wonderful herb to alleviate many of the side effects of medical torture and mutilation. And the problem, though, with marijuana is that if it was legalized, literally 80% of all the drugs being sold just wouldn't be needed. And I could see this, and I scratched my head and said, I wonder how this is going to play out. So in other words, you don't need the pain pills, don't need the antidepressants, don't need any of the sedatives, sleep aids, don't need any of the digestive aids, the H2 blockers, the antacids, the proton pump inhibitors, all the stomach drugs, all of a sudden you don't need any of them. And you don't need the glaucoma drugs. And it was just ba-bum, 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 this long list of very expensive drugs you just didn't need. And so I said, wow, this is amazing. So I said to myself, this stuff is not ever going to get legal in my lifetime. I could just not even give it my attention anymore. Then a funny thing happened, of course, which, by the way, this is an excellent lesson to everyone. The only reason marijuana is being made legal anywhere is, number one, people just chose to disobey the law. I understand half of all Americans have used marijuana at least once. And so you have half of all Americans who realize the government is powerless to control them through making laws. And so the government, just to preserve its power, had to say, rule change, marijuana is now legal. But on the other hand, they couldn't make it so legal that it would interfere with or threaten the pharmaceutical drug trade. So then they have this designation called medical marijuana. What does that mean? It means that marijuana is okay for medicinal purposes only. Well, wait, who decides what's a medicinal use? Who decides what's a medicinal dose? Who decides if it's appropriate? Answer, the doctor does, right?
Mm-hmm.
The doctor who's trained by who? The pharmaceutical industry that writes a curriculum for the medical school and for continuing medical education.
Uh-huh.
So when you make medical marijuana legal, like it's done in New York State, you've essentially kept it illegal. In other words, the doctor can prescribe if he wants to, but if he does, he loses his license. Because he can only prescribe it in amounts, at times, on occasions, approved of by the pharmaceutical industry.
Oh, so that's that was their way of controlling it, doing the whole medical thing.
Yeah, keeping it illegal. Let's put this in plain English.
That's
right.
What it is.
So I said, oh my God, it's legal for medical use in New York State. That's awesome. I'm just sitting here in Panama, I'm so happy for everybody, right? So I go and look at the law. I'm like, holy cow. This guy's got to complete, this poor doctor has to complete 20 pages of paperwork to write one marijuana prescription. And then he loses his license. I'm like, doesn't sound very legal to me. So if marijuana is okay for a legal purpose in a particular state, that really does not, for practical purposes, put marijuana in the hands of everyone who wants to use it for medical purposes. So let's say someone has difficulty sleeping and they want to be able to maybe take a puff at bedtime and they can get to sleep. Well, that person's probably not going to get access to medical marijuana because the doctor's just got to dump through too many hoops, and that particular hoop is not available. In other words, what constitutes medical use for marijuana is such a narrow definition, and the doctor has to do so much documentation to satisfy that. And then if he has a pattern of satisfying his documentation too frequently or too often for too many people, then, you know, he can be charged with basically, well, you're just selling marijuana prescriptions, you know, for the price of an office visit, give me a break. So is marijuana useful medically? Yes, it is. Is medical legalization of marijuana significant? Not really. So my personal feeling about it is if a state has not legalized it for recreational use, it's not legal. And if the patient is not free to decide, I won't say patient, the human being is not free to decide if they want to use it, when they want to use it, and how much they want to use it, then it's not really legal.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but if it is medical marijuana state, I think people that just want to grow it on their own or just get it from the guy down the street, they got a lot more cover that way anyway. So that makes it easier for people to use. But I think your point's well taken on the docs. I didn't realize there was that tight of control over whether the docs...
It's pretty tight. It's very tight. Wow. And you still have the nanny state. You still have the government telling you what you can and cannot do it and enforcing that edict with police power.
Sure. Probably always
going
to be that way, too.
Yeah, you're not accessible.
Probably going to always be that way until you put all the kings on an island and say, you guys just amuse yourself, you know, while we do our, while we become freer.
I think it's the other way around. You take all the free people who want freedom, like me, and you put them on an island. The government can stay there.
Oh, they got nobody else to rule. Yeah, we're all on an island. What are you guys doing over there? Well, I don't know. I'm in New York and there's nobody here. 888-663-6386, email patrick@1radionetwork.com. This is from Roy in Portland. I'm 56 years old and generally good health. I poop a lot, but I found myself with a couple pretty good sized looking hemorrhoids, and I've never had them before. And I'd like to ask Dr. Daniels if she understands the cause and the cure. On the internet, it says that the cause is constipation, but I generally poop two or three times a day, so that's not it for me. What could be the cause? From Paul Roy.
Okay, so the absolute cause is obstruction of the bile ducts. So the blood flow through the liver is blocked.
Blood flow.
The usual way that it's blocked is through constipation. The usual way that it's blocked is through constipation. But if you're having frequent bowel movements and you have hemorrhoids, then what's going on is you've got a block someplace else along the chain. So let's just go through the list here. So you could have a block in your colon, and you would see that as constipation. You could have a block in your small intestine. That you might not see, because if you can imagine a small intestine as a round tube about an inch in diameter, then the bile duct emptying from the liver goes into one side of this tube. All you need is stool covering that one side of the tube. You still have flow by it on the other half, but there's a blockage right there. And so the liver cannot empty. And when the liver can't empty, the blood flow to the liver is backed up. The safety valve is the rectal veins down there. They balloon up and you've got a hemorrhoid.
What do you mean the safety? So they balloon up because they're trying...
Well, you have a big pipe called the inferior vena cava, which is about 2 inches in diameter.
I beg your
carrying
pardon?
A lot of blood.
Yeah, okay.
The inferior vena cava. And that is like a big hose putting blood into the liver.
Okay.
Let's say the liver is blocked.
Yeah.
Well, you can't block off the inferior vena cava, and then you get troubles. Your legs swell up and everything.
Yeah.
And so the body's got a safety valve, which is the rectal vein that comes up to the liver from the rectum. And so what happens is you have this pressure needs to be relieved, and it goes down to the rectal veins. So how do you get rid of this?
Yeah.
There's just two ways. One, you can take high-dose sauerkraut juice, and that's going to just blast through the small intestines and through the liver and open up the bile ducts. And then that'll decompress the system, and you should notice that your hemorrhoids shrink and shrink and shrink and ultimately go away. Another way to do it is you could do high-dose castor oil, which would have a similar effect.
High-dose castor oil would do similar effects if you didn't like the sauerkraut. When you say high-dose, what are you talking about?
I would go for sauerkraut myself. It's okay. Tasty.
But on the castor oil, what would you go? What would you use?
Depends on your weight, but I would definitely do a quarter cup at least for an adult. Do that one day. If that doesn't do it, then wait 3 or 4 days and go up to a third of a cup. If that doesn't do it, then wait a few more days and go up to a half cup. Whoa. When I say do it, I mean create 6 or more bowel movements.
Wow. So really clean it out.
Yeah.
And what causes the little blockages in the small intestines, Doc?
Well, the small intestine is basically dehydration. So your food is not fluid enough when it leaves the stomach.
I see.
Uh-huh. And so the stomach, the width of the stomach is about, 5 or 6 inches wide. It's full of all this stuff. And then it all feeds into this 1-inch wide funnel, right? So you can see the problem there. And so if you don't have enough water or enough fluids, then, you've got a problem.
Would milk thistle and other liver herbs be appropriate with something like this as well?
They don't work. The problem is bigger than that.
I mean, but if you did the castor oil, could you also do the milk thistle, or if you're going to do the sauerkraut juice?
That's not the level where the problem is. So the problem is not that toxins aren't entering the liver cells, which is that's the problem that the milk thistle solves.
Ah.
The problem is that once the toxins enter the liver cell, the liver puts them into the bile, they can't go anywhere. That part's blocked, and you have a back pressure. That's the problem. Making the cell more permeable or more willing to accept toxins is not going to solve the problem, because your problem is further down the line, you've got a blockage creating this physical back pressure, and the pressure is being relieved by the rectal veins accepting the blood and swelling up.
Topically, in the meantime, for this person, I used to know some herbs. I had a hemorrhoid about 10 years ago. There's some herbs that you can kind of sit in. Do you familiar with that is? Those are?
Oh, yeah. Well, you can do a sitz bath, probably with lavender, with chamomile.
Anything soothing.
Yeah, anything soothing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You can put witch hazel on it. Witch hazel is a nice astringent, and that'll make them shrink.
What about the old standby they used to advertise on TV when I was a kid, Preparation H? I wonder if that'll kill you. I wonder what's in there. I've never seen the ingredients on that one.
I've looked it up before.
Have you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows? It could be anything in there. Probably stuff you can't pronounce. You probably don't want to do that. But witch hazel, though. Yeah. He can dab some witch hazel on there. That's a pretty good idea. That actually helps shrink them up, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. So good job there. I have a question. I'm a 50-year-old female, post-menopause, if that matters, for many months now, and I have had a feeling just below my left rib, like a dull ache. I can't tell if it's a stomach or a transverse colon. I do have problems with inconsistent bowel movements and take measures every few days to make sure things don't stay in the colon too long, but this feeling is always there. Please offer some ideas, if you can, of what this could possibly be. I do take turpentine a couple of times a month. I don't want to get into the medical tunnel and go through all the testing. So Lynn is not a medical tunnel person. It's good. She's doing turpentine. So left, what is that down there? Is that the pancreas down there? Left? What's down there?
No.
Oh, that's not. Isn't that where the pancreas is?
The pancreas is central.
It's central. Oh.
Central, that would be the center. So the head of the pancreas is a little to the right. The body is central. There's a little bit of tail that goes off to the left. But that's not what she's talking about. She's talking about, I think, the splenic flexure. So a lot of people think that the colon is an upside down U, which it's not.
Like a staple.
Yeah, no, and it's not.
It's not.
So imagine a staple and the center part droops like a drape.
A droopy staple.
Okay. That's what the colon is really like. So you can see then you have a hairpin turn by the liver. You have a second hairpin turn by the spleen.
Okay.
And that's what she's talking about, that hairpin turn by the spleen. Stuff is getting hung up there.
Ah.
And this stuff that gets hung up there causes a sense of fullness. It's always there. You always have a sense of kind of fullness, to like something's there. Mm-hmm. And then you can get a pressure or dull ache, or sometimes even a sharper ache, like almost like a contraction, a pregnancy contraction or something. Mm-hmm. And so I've had patients who it's terrible. This is what they have. So the answer is a couple of things you can do. The first thing is to do enemas. And then, as you can see, the poop goes from the right all the way up, makes a hairpin turn around the liver, goes down. And then as it goes up, it's going against gravity, right?
Yes.
And that's where things slow up. And then as it goes against gravity and gets to the top of the hill, boom, it's got a hairpin turn, and a lot of stuff doesn't make it and gets stuck right before that turn, and it builds up and builds up and creates a relative block there. So the answer is to drink more water, drink a lot more water, and to do enemas, and to massage the area while she does enemas, and it'll help loosen that that clump of stool, basically, is what it is. And usually it's kind of hardened, and so it'll get going. So she does enemas daily, and she can probably do something as simple as just warm water enemas with distilled water, and that will help relieve that.
Okay, we're going to play doctor here. This will be fun. Mm-hmm. Put down your coffee, everybody listening. Doc, see if you can describe to us exactly where we could find... I know it's different for everybody because everybody's probably got more droop or less droop. you know, how drooper are you? Where is this hairpin turn again on the left? It's curious. I've never heard this. It's probably interesting.
Okay, so you know where your hand... let's just start with your hand touching your side, right? You put your arm at your side.
I got it right there, okay.
Yep, and then you're going to follow up along your arm and you're going to hit the bottom of your rib. Got that?
Way bottom of the rib. Way down at the bottom, okay.
Yeah, it's just, so you got a rib.
Yep.
Now... what I want you to do is go towards the center about 2 inches.
Okay, I'm there.
And then go up.
Okay.
You feel that?
Yeah.
Right there. Press in right there. Okay. The hairpin turn is actually a little bit up under that rib, maybe a half inch under.
Oh, that's where she was saying under the rib. I see. See, I didn't know the colon went up that high.
Yeah.
Wow. See, on the interweb, it doesn't have a going up that high. See, they just took a picture of somebody's perfect colon or something.
Well, it's out of context. They don't show the ribs going over the colon.
They don't show the ribs. See, wow. Right. And so you mean if that hairpin turn is right under that left rib, and then the colon droops all the way down underneath the belly button? Or not that far, maybe?
No, you're...
Not that far.
Yeah, it's just above the belly button.
Wow.
Is how far down it droops, about an inch or two above the belly button. That's right.
Uh-huh. So drooping, is that a God thing, or is that just because we were dumb standard American?
That's a God thing.
It's a God thing. That's the way it works. I'll be darned. Huh. I'll be darned. I wonder why God put it in a hairpin.
Yeah, back here, you can see it on the internet. Yeah, that
they always do it straight across, right? Yeah. Oh, you can see it?
Well, no. You have to Google picture of rib, colon, and spleen.
Oh, see.
And then you see the picture and you go, aha.
You know how to Google, girl. Okay, I'm going to do that. Picture of rib. Rib, colon.
Colon, and spleen.
And spleen.
And you'll see the rib, the colon, and the spleen are superimposed on each other.
Oh, yes, they are. Look at that.
Yes, they are. And that's why that flexure there is so hard for her to get at.
Yeah.
To massage, you can see that. You can see where that rib obscures everything. You can see where this irritating block of this feces is going to give her what she perceives to be pain either in or right below her rib. And that spleen being in the way is no help.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that.
So what's going on right at the, you know, the center and the V, you know, the ribs, right? You got that little V at the bottom, right? At the top of the ribs? Whatever you call
it. So that's the xiphoid process.
The xiphoid process. And if you press in there, what are you touching there?
That's the liver. See the picture right there? Liver runs right over that.
You're touching the liver. Wow.
Liver's right under that xiphoid process. Now, depending on how you put together, your stomach can be sitting on top of that as well. Now, there's a diaphragm in the mix here, right?
Yeah.
So the diaphragm goes above and around the liver.
Mm-hmm.
See that diaphragm?
Yeah,
there?
Pretty cool. Huh. I went to a chiropractor the other day, and he was, we were dinking around because every now and then I push down my stomach. Every now and then my stomach wants to go a little high up, you know, kind of like a hiatal hernia thing. And he was showing me down on the right side, if you go just to the left, there's this little valve that goes into the small intestine. What's it called?
Yeah. Pyloric valve.
Pyloric valve. Or is that what it is? Pyloric valve. And he said, if you feel soreness there, that you can kind of massage that and flip it back and forth, back and forth. And
absolutely.
Sometimes it gets stuck, he says, and it'll open up and help drain out your tummy, and then it's easier to move your tummy down, which is pretty cool. And I've been playing with it, and you can actually feel it kind of moving around like that a little bit.
Exactly. Now, what's again, it's this exact same cause.
Same cause.
Dehydration, contents are too dry, and it can't get through that valve.
So more water, more water.
More water. And this is why it's actually healthy to drink with your meals, during your meals. It makes sure you don't get hung up at this valve there. And the food is in your stomach, you know, it mixes with the juices, and then it can flow easily into the small.
You know, it's interesting you say that. In Ayurveda medicine, they always said when you eat, here is their thing, you know, this goes back, and they're always very poetic, Doc. And they go, your stomach, well, after you eat, should be one half food, one half, or one third water, one third food, and one third air. And they always recommend eating with meals too. But in America, out here, even...
Drinking with meals,
right. But in America, even all the natural docs, they go, no, don't do that. You'll dilute your stomach acid. And you'll,
exactly.
And you'll, right? That's what they all say, most of them.
Uh-huh.
You think they're wrong.
Oh, they're absolutely wrong. But why do they say that? They say that because that's what they were taught to do.
Oh, you mean in naturopathic school or wherever they go?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They started licensing naturopaths. So they got to give them this information, too.
Yeah, make up rules for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's true, isn't it? It really is. People love rules. Or people love to tell everybody else rules or something. Wow, pretty interesting. Okay. I have a question for Dr. Daniels. This is from Lynn. She's in Pensacola, Florida. Great city. I'm 50... Oh, 50-year-old menopause. Oh, same thing twice. Oh. I don't think we should need to answer it again. Sorry.
No.
I sent in a question for Dr. Daniels last month. It was right before this show, so maybe it came in too late. Anyway, yeah, we always take them in order, and sometimes we don't get to them all. I'm wondering if she's ever heard or used other essential oils with white sugar. Oh, and if the results could be similar or good, what she's seen with the turpentine. Oh, interesting question. Have you ever seen other essential oils, Doc, used with
I do not. Sugar? No, I have not used other oils with turpentine.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing to understand is this was actually dredged up from history. So I did not make this up.
Oh.
And so the sugar with turpentine literally has a glorified history of success over several hundred, if not several thousand years.
Long time.
And I can't speak for other essential oils, but going to guess is a good reason why they're not used with sugar.
Mm-hmm. Plus, generally with essential oils, you don't take that amount, do you? I mean, it's pretty...
Oh, no, you don't take that amount and you don't take them internally. And that's another thing. Turpentine is not, properly speaking, an essential oil.
It's not.
So essential oils, no. Essential oils are made by mashing and grinding up the leaves or whatever the plant matter is. And then the oil is extracted from it.
Yes.
That's not what turpentine is. So in turpentine, I mean, they do make stuff like that. They do call it turpentine, but it's not the therapeutic turpentine you're looking for. So the therapeutic turpentine you're looking for is actually the sap of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
So the sap is taken out of the tree, and then that sap, the oil is removed from it through distillation.
Right.
And so it is not made from the plant matter, like the pine cones or the pine needles or the wood chips or whatever. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then they have a whole... They distill it or cook it and all that stuff. It's a different thing. So you're right. It's really not an essential oil. Yeah.
It would be different between me isolating something, taking your blood and spinning it and making plasma, for example, versus me grinding up the whole tissue, your arm, your bone, everything, and then trying to extract plasma from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're going to get two different things.
I wonder what the difference is between this... Diamond G-Force products. Now, I talked to this fellow. I called him a couple years ago. And he said, like you said, Doc, he said, that's all I do. He He said, I just take the sap. That's all I do. And I distill it. I just cook it. And that's what I come up with. So that's pretty clean process. I wonder, do we know, even if you get a pure pine gum spirits at the hardware store, which you say is okay if they say that, is that all they do to it? Do we know?
By definition. That's what the word means.
That's what they
gum
do.
Gum means from the sap.
Ah, okay. All right.
Yeah, so pure means nothing else.
Okay.
Gum means from the sap. Spirit means distilled.
Okay.
So pure gum spirits. Now, you'll see other turpentine that says pure wood turpentine. And that turpentine, they've ground up the wood chips and extracted whatever oil they could from the wood chips, which is, like I said, like grinding up your arm and trying to get plasma out of it.
You don't want to do
versus that. Versus just taking the blood out of your veins, which is the same as the sap out of the tree, and then isolating it from there.
Then I suspect there's other genres of turpentine, chemicals and from oil and who knows what, right, as well.
Frankincense is turpentine. There are all kinds of turpentines out there, but only one is made from the sap of the tree through distillation, and that's why it's called pure gum spirits of turpentine. So a lot of people say, oh, I just want turpentine. No, you don't. You want pure gum spirits of turpentine. Eucalyptus is also turpentine.
When you say turpentine, eucalyptus and frankincense, you mean they're from the pine tree?
No, no. Turpentine refers to a type of compound.
A type of, oh.
That contains terpenes and terpenols. But it's not pure gum spirits of turpentine. So that's why you have to get pure, which means 100%, gum, which means from the sap, spirits means distilled of turpentine. And that is only the pine tree. That is the word. So if you just say, oh, I want turpentine, you could get just about anything.
So like frankincense and these other things, they're the same process but from a different tree or a different plant?
No, it's a different process from a different plant. But the compound you finally get has certain chemicals present in it, and therefore it's classified as a turpentine.
Terpenes.
Yeah.
And terpenes are good for you?
Well, the deadly, you know, the dangers in the dose, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have said before you don't want to use turpentine around your head and your face because it's a why?
It goes straight through to the brain.
Then
you can get an overdose for your brain.
Yeah, not good.
Right.
What are symptoms if somebody does too much pure gum spirits?
You mean on their brain or just any old place?
Any old place. In other words, what would be some symptoms if they're doing too much every day what could be some symptoms that you've heard over the years?
Dizziness, contractions, where your body just twitches, even seizures, abdominal pain, and really any kind of cleansing reaction. You can get skin rashes, you can get headaches, you can take all kinds of forms, but usually you get the dizziness first.
Hello. Go ahead.
Usually you get the dizziness first, and then things get worse from there.
Yeah, yeah. But that's the beauty of this Candida, what's your report called, Candida Cleansa, on your website, is you go into all of that, and you really talk about using your Vitality Capsules or other things to get the You got to be moving and grooving before you do this, right?
To create a situation where you will not get a toxic side effects and to start at a dose that's not going to be toxic.
Yeah, which is a good thing. And it's called the Candida Report, Candida Cleanse.
Candida Cleaner at VitalityCapsules.com. All you need to do is go to VitalityCapsules.com, put in your email address, and you will get the report.
Anyway, Candida Cleaners, what it's called.